Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a Soundings podcast, a podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I am your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today on the show, we've got not one, not two, but three great guests, all who have contributed short stories to the just-released Star Wars, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Like the first edition, this book features 40 short stories written by 40 different authors set during the period of Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back, to celebrate the film's 40th anniversary. And like the first, this edition does a wonderful job expanding our purview of a film many consider to be the best of the saga. Joining me to discuss their contribution to the book and the film's lasting effect are Amy Ratcliffe, Jason Fry, and Mike Chen. Amy is a pop culture and entertainment reporter, managing editor over at Nerdist, and author of the also-just-released The Jedi Mind and Ellie and Me. She's a fixture on stage at many conventions, and while this may be her first contribution to the From a Certain Point of View series, it definitely won't be her last. Jason is the author of countless Star Wars stories and reference books, including The Last Jedi Expanded Edition and the short Duty Roster from the first From a Certain Point of View. He is a longtime contributor to both Wizards of the Coast and Star Wars Insider. And Mike, who is making his Star Wars publishing debut, is the author of A Beginning at the End and Here and Now and Then, both receiving overwhelming praise from the science fiction community. This January, he's back with We Could Be Heroes, which looks to be another winner for Mike. Warning, this is a spoiler discussion, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've read the book.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Everything is Canon, Star Wars, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back Roundtable, or the EICSWFACPOVTESBRT. That's a little wordy, but we like it. We've got three great authors with us today who have all contributed to the just released From a Certain Point of View, Empire Strikes Back. We've got Amy Ratcliffe, author of Heroes of the Rebellion. Hi, Amy.
Hello. Thank you for having us, Steve.
Nice of course. Yes, you as always. We've got Mr. Jason Fry, author of Rendezvous Point. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. And as we were just discussing, brand new member of the Star Wars publishing family, Mr. Mike Chen, who authored Disturbance. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I am very happy to be here.
I'm sure. And I know you guys are doing interviews like crazy right now. So we're going to stick to our time here. And I don't want to keep you any longer than we need to. We'll just, when I say we'll go sort of around the table, we'll go in that same order, Amy, Jason, and Mike, just so there's no confusion. I want to start off, though, just basically because this is, you know, these books come out, they're in line with the anniversaries of the original trilogy, right? So just if we could just go around the table and if you can sort of try and, you know, I know it's hard, but summarize what Empire Strikes Back means to you personally and sort of how you were introduced to it, depending on, you know, ages vary, right? So if we could just start with that, Amy, maybe take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will have you know, I just made a list of the order we just were introduced in, so I wouldn't forget. Because that's how I work.
Yeah, of course.
I was introduced to Empire Strikes Back, as with All Star Wars, so I'm kind of late. I was a teenager. And they came out, and the special editions came out in the theaters when they were re-released. So, you know, I for sure have seen the special editions way more than I ever have the theatrical ones as a result. And Empire Strikes Back really means to me, it's something that I feel like has changed as I've gotten older, but means growth. It means learning. I think the scenes on Dagobah with Yoda and Luke speak to me in a way they necessarily didn't when I first saw the film, and certainly not when I was in my 20s. But I appreciate Yoda more and more with each rewatch because he's just trying his best and Luke just keeps not listening. So
you're not trying to segue into your wonderful new book, are you?
No, but thank you. Jedi Mind. No, just kidding. So yeah, growth, I think, and seeing characters grow and learning and failing. That's kind of what Empire is about for me.
Mm-hmm. Jason?
I was 11 when it came out and was, as a huge Star Wars fan, was incredibly excited, as you might imagine. A funny thing happened. My best friend at the time was a kid named Max, and his mother was this very serious law-abiding woman, but for some very strange reason, she did something that was totally out of character for her. She took a tape recorder into the movie And yeah, the statute of limitations has run out on this, so I think I'm safe. And recorded on like old cassette tapes, the soundtrack just sitting there in the audience. And, you know, I probably wore those out. But it was literally just the audio along with people like eating popcorn and getting up to go to the bathroom and stuff. But, you know, and it ran out in the carbon freeze chamber. But it, in a funny way, like that soundtrack of whatever chunk that is of the movie is like, I can close my eyes and run through the entire thing in my head because I listened to it 200 times as a kid. But the other thing I take from Empire now as a storyteller is just, it's a reminder to be brave. I mean, it throws away every bit of the blueprint you would think you'd rely on for a sequel, from, you know, where the battle is to separating the ensemble cast to, you know, doing just terrible, terrible things to the characters you've come to know and love to shake their worldviews and then kind of split them all apart again. And so every time I'm kind of lost the courage of my convictions with a story I'm thinking through, I'm like, oh, remember Empire and, you know, stick to your guns because it'll work.
Sure. Mike?
So I was born in 78. I believe I was taken to the theater to see Empire because I have an older brother who's 2 years older than me. Because I know we saw Jedi together in the theater in 83, but I believe I was there in 80. You know, I don't really remember much specifically about viewing it, but it has been like present there. Like, and I had Hoth toys. I had the Tauntaun with the cut in his vinyl gut so you could stick your figures in him. And I didn't think it was weird at the time. So I've just always, as I grew as, you know, as a kid and became, you know, more interested in stories, Empire always stuck with me as having much more gravity. And even when I was in like elementary school and middle school and high school, my friends who I still argue about this with all the time, who are insistent that Return of the Jedi is the best Star Wars movie. And I'm like, no, it is Empire. Empire is a perfect movie. We have had 40-year arguments about this, and I will die on that hill. Empire is a perfect movie.
I think it, you know, obviously Empire tops a lot of lists for people. There's no doubt about it. Return, it always depends on when you were born and how you first experienced Star Wars. For me, I was 4 when Empire came out. My parents took me to the theater to see it. And so I don't remember it entirely from start to finish. The parts I do remember vividly are everything on Dagobah and all the Cloud City stuff, especially, you know, the Luke and Vader battle. I mean, the imagery is striking, right? Obviously with the backgrounds and the lightsabers just popping. But anyways, because I think of what I remember most about it is why Yoda is my favorite Star Wars character, always has been, still is today. And speaking of Yoda, Amy, congrats. You're on quite the role here between Ellie and Me, The Jedi Mind, and next year's The Art of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. Massive congratulations.
Thank you. Just so, weird timing.
Right. And though, you know, you've been obviously just part of Star Wars for so long in so many different ways. It's almost like, I remember when they announced the author list for this edition, I was like, yeah, Amy, of course. Like, she should have been in the first one, but I'm glad you're here now. And just how was your first experience for writing from a certain point of view? Because these are so great, these books that I love these editions, and I can't wait, you know, for Return of the Jedi and then eventually the other ones. And how was your first from a certain point of view experience?
Oh, well, similarly, I can't wait for the other ones, though I know the way time moves these days, it'll be here so soon. But I was, you know, such a huge fan of the first edition and, you know, really remembered sitting down with that and just digesting, kind of trying to savor. I love to savor stories, but I'm also a pretty fast reader. So I usually have to make like an effort to slow down and like soak in what's happening. And I did that with the first from a certain point of view and just loved seeing kind of all these ancillary characters and their stories and their lives, and it makes the galaxy bigger and cooler and more relatable. So when I got asked about this one, it was just surreal. And I had a minute where, you know, previous to this, my only fiction I'd written in Star Wars or for really period is Ellie and Me, a children's picture book in 500 words, a little bit different than a few thousand words. And I kind of had to like you know, I know Tom really well, the editor, but I was like, I just turned in the story and he sent a first, you know, his notes back. And I'm like, hopefully it wasn't too bad. Haven't written a short story since college. Maybe I should have told you that beforehand. he was very supportive and said whether he was fitting or not, that he couldn't tell. But he helped me a lot. And it was just a joy to get to, you know, kind of write. I love making backstories. That's something I love to do when I play RPGs. Like, and so I kind of like leaned into that kind of writing of, I'm like, I get to do that, but for real. So it was really intimidating. But
yeah. Tom is great too. I'll second that. Third, yes. These books strike me as sort of just like licensed fan fiction in a way, because I really love like the Gears of War, like when we get to like meet these characters in the background and like see how the machine runs and the people that make this machine run. So that's why I thought your story was really great, Amy. Jason, your list of contributions to Star Wars is long and growing, and you've done just about everything at this point. And this is your second from a certain point of view. How is this compared to the first, you know, and how does it just, how is it for you overall, this experience writing another one?
Oh, it was wonderful. You know, from getting to be, from getting to be on a list of so many impressive authors, new and old. I mean, that was a huge honor. And also, you know, getting support first book, which is just an amazing cause, bringing books to,
yes,
you know, to underprivileged kids who, you know, might go without. I think, you know, I mean, anybody who's been an avid reader as a, you know, as a kid, I mean, understands how important that is. And so it's great to be able to do that. But no, I was thrilled to get to do it again. And the interesting thing was that the first go around for A New Hope, FacPov, kind of shaped this one. In that one, I was dealing with the character known in Star Wars circles as Fake Wedge. And I really love that story, but it's a very meta story. It's basically kind of an inside cinema joke turned into a story, which was hard because the joke takes about 500 words to tell. And then I was like, oh, wait, now I got to make this into a story. How's that going to work? Which I thought of a little late, but I think it worked out. But so for this one, I was like, you know, let's go back to Wedge, but in a different way. And so I wanted to do something that felt very different, that was just, you know, kind of straightforward, big-hearted storytelling with an inside joke here or there.
Sure. Let's get to the Greenhorn. Michael, Mike, big moment for you. I have to assume you're a lifelong Star Wars fan. It sounds like you are. How was this for you, your very first Star Wars experience?
It was intimidating. So it's funny when we talk about like future possible iterations of this, about 6 months, I think, before I was asked to do this, there was one of those shoot your shot threads on Twitter where everyone's like posting like, what's your dream projects? And I had actually made like 30 pitches or so to do a Phantom Menace version of this book. And I did this like mega thread and I was just hoping that people would notice it. And actually I believe Jen and Tom, like, I think that's when they first started following me on Twitter, because it got boosted by some friends who are writing in the canon. So the style of, you know, trying to think about like what's going on in the background, like that's where my head goes. Like with my other books, I'm very character focused. And so to be able to do this with Star Wars, for something that is this consequential, like I did not think they were actually going to let me do that. You know, I had actually prepared other pitches. Just was like, there's no way they're going to let a new writer get to tackle Palpatine like this. And then they did. And each stage of approval, I'm like, okay, well, this is where it's going to go, you know, off the rails. But it's printed now, and they can't take that away from me now.
That's one of the great things too I love about Tom and Elizabeth and Jennifer, for sure, is they're constantly like data mining, right? They're always on the lookout and they're so open to new authors and new ideas. It's fantastic. I know I talked to Tom, had him on the show a while ago talking about the process, you know, and it's just the amount of names they've got. It's almost an embarrassment of riches, and how they narrow it down, I have no freaking idea, but like it's good to know they're set for the future. I mean, they could probably do several editions of each of these movies and have enough authors and have enough quality stories, and it would be a hit every time. So Amy, Corwe Selgroth or Groth, how do I say that?
I like Selgroth.
Selgroth. is this a case of art imitating life a little bit with you? It feels like I could see, you know, Intrepid Amy at her first conventions, instead of Echo Base, it's a convention and you're chasing down, you know, the big interview in your earlier days. Is that, am I off there? Or?
No, you're pretty spot on. Okay. It was definitely, you know, when we talked about what I could do with this book, and Tom suggested, like, let's write a rebel who gets away on that first transport. Mm-hmm. And I had been reading Alphabet Squadron by Alexander Freed, and there are a few references in that to rebellion propaganda and people who have been affected by seeing recruitment hollows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of also started from the fiction advice I hear a lot is write what you know. So, and I've always been curious about what journalism is like in the Star Wars world. And certainly, you know, it's like a little wish fulfillment too, because something I grapple with a lot in my day job as an entertainment reporter is I'm like, does this really matter? So here I was like, well, Corey, she's helping the rebellion in some way fight the Empire. And that's hugely important. I don't have to have conversations and inner monologue about is what I'm doing adding value to the world. And I just thought it'd be really cool to explore that in Star Wars and how someone who could go from that path to what happens when the Empire comes in and they take over basically all the news and control the narrative, and where could she go from there? And working with the Empire, or rather the rebellions, who recruit soldiers to help them fight, just kind of seemed like a natural transition. And, you know, I brought in elements. I play in a Star Wars RPG and I play a character, a diplomat agitator, who when they travel to various planets, that's like her goal is to bring people to the rebellion. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of brought in all these elements and kind of hoped it came together. And it was just really cool to get to write a like journalist, a reporter, but make it Star Wars.
She, you know, we're not going to get spoilery, obviously, but she does sort of, she's at the right place at the right time for a really, you know, an important moment in sort of Star Wars, as far, especially as far as taglines go. And yeah. So she's that kind of like really gets her career going in a big way. And that allows her to even just to be in a position to be at Echo Base and to try and, like you said, sort of not only rile up the troops, but gather recruitments at the same time. I thought, you know, what was the idea? You don't have a lot of words to work with here, but at some point, one of the things I thought you did really well was you really stretched this story from, you know, it goes from small to big in a lot of different ways, right? You've got intimate moments with her doing what she does best, but then also, making it, painting a larger picture with the stuff she's already seen and done. Was that sort of the idea that, you know, you start, play a little small ball, but then expand it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of wanted to play with that, you know, as far as it, she expands her perspective along the way too. So I kind of wanted to weave that throughout the story. And
right.
It was also important to me, you know, knowing that the end of the story was going to be on that rebel transport. Like, it was very much a conversation of like, how far back do we go? What kind of time period do we cover in the story? And that was, it was a tricky balance and definitely something I struggled with. And, you know, you try to hit those certain beats along the way, you know, like, okay, I want to get her to this emotional place here, have this realization at this spot, and just to try to put the pieces together. It was really challenging, but in a good way.
It definitely left me feeling like really good the way that short ends. Like, you know what I mean? It gave me some goosebumps at the end and really left me feeling like in a good, and it appears earlier in the book too. So it's like really, you know, there's a couple of stories. The layout is fantastic as in the book. And that's one of the stories that really, you know, like gets you in a good mood, and pushes you on because you know, some dark stuff is coming eventually. Right. So
yes.
It was definitely you did a great job with that. Jason, besides having an incredible knack for survival, what is it about Wedge Antilles that you find so attractive? People love Wedge Antilles, and it, you know, and he's not flash and bang, right? He puts the hours in, he puts the work in. He's your grease monkey pilot, hardworking, loyal guy. What do you find attractive about Wedge? What's the thing there?
I think you said that very well. I mean, he goes to work. You know, he's not Luke Skywalker. He was Luke Skywalker's wingman who left Luke and feels guilty about that. And then, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to explore in this story is that, you know, what does he have to do? What does he have to go through in his own mind to take on that burden? and then also to get the pilots who were going to report to him to take that on and deal with it. And you know, that's something I like about him, and I think that's very Star Wars. Like, he's, you know, he's called to a moment, and he has to respond. And he does so seriously, and he does so in, you know, all the ways he thinks fears he's deficient. Those are actually the things that makes him a good leader, and makes him able to deal with that, in the pilots who are going to report to him, who he has to keep alive. So yeah, that was fun to explore. And also, I mean, you know, to be less lofty about it, I just love pilots, and I love, you know, I love starfighters and pew pew and all that. So the chance to go back to that, I mean, it was just too much fun to resist.
It's probably not a spoiler to say, you know, like, one of the things he does is sort of get Red Squadron back together. It's not a huge spoiler, I don't think, but one thing I find very attractive is I love humble heroes, and he's in humble to a fault almost, and he's reluctant in some ways, and like you said, yeah, he left Luke, but as a character that you've put in this story reminds him he also took out six ties on his way out or something or whatever it is, so he just with a damaged ship. What this character can, there's, you have a character named Contessa. I don't know how much we're allowed to say about Contessa, if anything. I don't know, were you given any?
The Contessa's a character, she's one of Claudia Gray character from Lost Stars. And she was a character who really stuck with me from that book. I mean, Claudia has a great gift for, you know, for crafting characters that stick in the mind. And even though I went back to Lost Stars for that, and there was actually not a lot about the Contessa, which speaks so well to what Claudia did. I mean, she very efficiently sketched in that character and made her stick with you. But I ran that by Claudia. You know, it's funny, like, our characters don't belong to us. They go in the Lucasfilm sandbox.
Right. Right.
And that's something that we all know going in. But at the same time, I felt that, you know, it was professional courtesy to do that. And so I had her review that. But, you know, it was fun to do. And it was a way to tip the cap to that book. In a story that itself is a tip of the cap to the X-Wing novels back from Legends days.
Right.
But, you know, that's part of the fun, is all these characters can come back out of the sandbox in other stories and other settings. And, you know, that's something that's terrific as an author, whether you're picking up the toys or putting them down for somebody else.
She has the line of the story, the "even heroes die" line. I'm sure you remember writing that one. That's the line. I think that's a fantastic line, and just a great moment. And that's her exchanges in particular with Wedge are really great, really strong.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Mr. Chen. So
yes,
yeah,
sir.
You're like, yeah, I'm going to write some Star Wars, and I think I'm going to start with the Emperor a pivotal moment. And I mean, a moment we all remember seeing this film for the first time, and, you know, he appears on screen for the first time, and he utters that beautiful line, which is gorgeous, and we loved it, but we're instantly like, what's he talking about? Right? And then we never really find out. Not really. I mean, we kind of do, but not really, not in a literal sense. So you're like, you know what? I'm going to fill in that hole. So what was the thought going into writing this story? You know, there's been little blurbs about each of your stories put out there, so there's, you know, a couple things we can talk about. We know that sort of the Force speaks to Mr. Palpatine and sort of reveals some things to him. So what was it, is it you just like big challenges, or are you just, or you're just confident, which is great, just to jump right in and tackle something as important as this?
Tom had sent over like four or five different characters that he was like, okay, well, why don't you take a look at these? And then I was just kind of shocked that Palpatine was on the list. And I had come up with pitches for like the protocol droid that swears at C-3PO. you know, just like the technician who is sitting behind Admiral Ozzel when Ozzel gets choked out. Like, I came up with pitches for each of these. But then I'm thinking in my head, like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to write Star Wars again. So if I'm going to try to do it, let me try to do something memorable. Like, not just cool, but like something that makes an impact on canon. So I've always viewed that scene between Vader and Palpatine as like a very just subtle chess match where they're both kind of feeling each other out to see like what each other person knows. Mm-hmm. And so I really wanted to get into Palpatine's head there. And then with the idea that Palpatine is always strategizing and like his tone, like the tone in the actual prose, you don't really get a lot about feeling in there. Like from an emotional perspective, everything in there is very detached, very, you know, strategic, very much about like manipulation and combat. So that was the idea going into it, was like, well, one, can I define this really huge moment in canon? And that's, you know, not up to me. Obviously, that's up to Tom and the story group. But then two, like, if I get to do that, how am I going to do that? And then the idea was to like make Palpatine more like a, you know, a being of the dark side rather than Sheev Palpatine, you know, just another dude.
Yeah. And that's like, this is, your story is one of the ones that really is going to like affect the, you know, the lens of which you watch the movie through in a big way, right? Because now every time we see that, we're going to think Palpatine just went through what he goes through in your story, turns around and turns on the hollow, right? Like it's so fresh and alive in that moment. And that's like, we're never going to be able to watch this, that part the same way again. It's same way, like, you know, every time we see the transports take off from Hoth, we're going to be like, oh, I wonder if Corey's on that one. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's, you've really changed the way we look at this film. Is that on your mind at all?
It was definitely intimidating. I would say too, the things that I've put in there, I think they're all very logical extractions from things that have been established in the prequels and Clone Wars. So I don't think I'm like coming out of left field with anything wild. It's more about like, there's all these threads that are sewn elsewhere, and also what we know about the dark side and Palpatine's connection to the dark side. So it made sense to just kind of try to bring the threads together in like 4,000 words in a really cohesive fashion.
Really great job, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. So let's end on this note. I have already made the decision that the three of you are coming back for Return of the Jedi.
I'm all for it.
I support this. Thank you, Steve.
So give me your pitch, Amy. What do you want? Call dibs right now.
Oh, you know, I think it would be like, I don't know if it would be like a poem form or not, but I think there could be something written of what the creatures and what Dagobah like feels when Yoda passes, because
amazing,
he's there for a while, and they clearly like, I just think there's a connection there, and that could be something weird and good.
And there's a lot of really great Dagobah content in this book too, from in some of the other stories.
Yes.
One by Tracy is unbelievable.
Dion.
Yeah,
oh,
the cave is just what a man. I got chills just right now thinking about it again. Amy, that's a beautiful idea, man. I would love to see that one. Jason, what do you got? Call dibs.
Well, look, you know, if I've done Wedge twice, I think if they're going to ask me back, that die is sort of cast. And that's okay. That is okay. I will make it work, and I will have an unbelievably good time doing it.
Listen, and as we know now, I mean, he's in it until the very end of this entire thing, right? Of the entire saga. So, like, you're in it for life now, right? I mean, in 40 years, when we do the rise of Skywalker from a certain point of view, right? They have to get you to do that. So talk about job security. I love it.
They're contractually obligated.
Your lips to their ears.
Okay. Yes. Mike, what do you got?
I suppose I would want to try to do Palpatine again, you know, if I've been able to stake that claim. Like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, Palpatine on the Death Star, like, kind of sensing the Luke and Vader conversation on Endor when Luke is brought in, and, you know, they give Vader his lightsaber and everything like that. If they won't let me do that, though, I would love to write the story of Captain Rex coming onto Endor and helping, you know, with the rebellion, like, take out the shield generator.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That would be great. Gosh.
Hera's on Endor, too.
She is.
Oh boy.
That's cool. That could be a fight.
We're gonna fight each other to
that could be a fight over that one. Yeah, yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of competition for that.
That's, I mean, and you know, just we'll get out of here in this note. That's really, isn't that the magic of these books, right? I mean, it's like there's some kind of, you could watch the movie or just think about it right now, and there's going to be some obvious ones maybe to you, right? But they really want you to like look deep into the weeds and really pull for some stuff. Like you know, we know now that, yeah, that Hera, General Syndulla is on there, and, you know, she's not in the film, right? But we know she's there. So that's fair game, according to Tom and the Del Rey folks, right? So that's the kind of stuff we love to see. And I love all three of these ideas. Obviously, I don't have any say, but if I did, they would all be in. From a certain point of view, Return of the Jedi. Amy, Jason, and Mike, I can't thank you enough. I know you're doing a ton of these things. I really appreciate your time. It was nice to hear from Amy and Jason again. And Mike, it was really great to meet you. And I'm sure we'll talk at some point down the road. So thank you very much, folks, and enjoy the rest of your evening. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Amy, Jason, and Mike for joining me. If you're going to talk Star Wars with anybody, these three are a good place to start for sure. From a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back is out now, so make sure you pick up a copy wherever you buy your books. A friendly reminder that all proceeds are going to First Book, a leading nonprofit that provides new books, learning materials, and other essentials to educators and organizations serving children in need. Head on over to firstbook.org for more information. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please be safe out there, and bye for now.
Our time has come, it's time to go now.